This is KHOI, Story City Ames and surrounding areas.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Pat Schlerbaum and KHOI's station manager, Mike Murphy.
Today we will see clouds moving in with a daytime high of 79 degrees. Winds will be from the south-southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. For this evening, we can expect partly cloudy skies, decreasing southeasterly winds, and an overnight low down around 44. Sunset will be 6:50 p.m., and our current temperature is 49 degrees.
Oh, thank you, Pat. I'd like to welcome Story County Board of Health, Dr. Betsy Matos, Assistant Director of Environmental Health and Safety for Iowa State Universities. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning.
I'm glad you could join us this morning. You're here for the Story County Board of Health representation, and how many members are on that board?
I think there is a total of seven, and I think one of them is ex officio, so it's one of the Board of Supervisors members
sure.
that sits there as well.
Okay, very good. Okay, so let's get right at it. Of course, COVID is still in the news, and wondering if you can provide our listeners with an update.
Well, thank you for the invite, by the way. So yes, my understanding is in the last 7 days, Story County has reported 84 positive cases. I think we're in the medium or in the low side of cases, but thankfully it could be because of the vaccination and the vaccine clinics. I know that McFarland has vaccination clinics for flu and COVID, and you could get one day and one another day, or you could get both the same day. And people can access that either they can call McFarland or they could Google vaccine.mcfarlandclinic.com and then they can online schedule it. And they have different locations too with different hours of the day. It seems fairly accessible.
Mm-hmm. So it's best to call ahead and at least check out. And I know that some of the other outlets that in the past have been offering those as well. Now, this is a little different vaccine, this booster. It's what's called a bivalent. So you get a couple of different variants in that vaccine, that inoculation. I believe that's with Pfizer and Moderna. Both of those cover the same things. Is that?
That's my understanding
okay.
as well. Yes.
It looks like we're okay, but we're getting into that season, and of course, folks are going to be gathering. So what are we going to do? Should we take some of those same precautions? Do you recommend that? Does the Board of Health recommend that?
I think it is important to take those precautions. Flu has been with us at least most of our lifetime, right? It's still a virus that can potentially cause severe either amenities, like, so for example, you could feel really, really sick. But COVID, as we know, can make you really sick, and sometimes people can succumb to the sickness and die, right? So yes, I think washing your hands, if you have a cough, cover it with your elbow if you can, or a tissue, wash your hands again. If you feel that you're having some symptoms like coughing or sore throat or anything like that, mask when if you're going to go to an event, mostly to protect the people around you from whatever you may have. Allergy season is here as well. Right now, I'm experiencing some allergies, and I'm still wearing a mask when I'm out around other people. Yesterday, I went to fitness class, and I wore a mask the entire time. I tested negative for COVID, but I just want to make sure that the people around me, first of all, don't catch anything that I have, even though allergies, you can't really spread.
Sure.
But I want, it's more also a perception thing, right?
So right.
I want to make sure that I have that.
Yeah, and if you're going into areas where, say it's a retirement community or a health community, you definitely should think about wearing a mask so that you're not passing something on to those who are more susceptible. Agree with you. And that's just another way of perhaps alleviating the influenza exposure. It's surprising how many people say, gosh, I didn't get the flu last year or the year before. I think it's because they wore a mask. It's kind of one of those light bulb moments. Okay, let's talk about flu, the influenza season a little bit. There's vaccinations available for that now as well.
Yes, so as I mentioned, if you're in Ames or I think McFarland has different clinics, but you can go and get a vaccine. At Iowa State University, for example, employees get a free vaccination this week for flu. They have from starting yesterday till October 14, from 9 to 4, if you're a university employee. For students, the Student Health Center is providing in different locations around the university flu and COVID vaccinations as well. So it's really good because that way they're making it really accessible to this population that is usually in close quarters and okay. has to, you know, maybe attend social events that are in close indoor. So it's a very good accessibility for that.
Sounds very good. You mentioned when I talked to you earlier something about the Iowa Department of Public Health merging with the Department of Human Services. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So I attended, I was thankful to attend the Iowa Public Health Association meeting back in May, I think it was, and the director of the Department of Iowa Human Services, Kelly Garcia, gave a presentation about the initiatives, the program that they have been working with to merge both the Department of Public Health and the Department of Human Services. And this came pre-COVID, so this is something that has been in the works. So you may start seeing that publications, even in their social media, their tag has changed to Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. So it's very similar, the name, it resembles the name that we have in the federal level, you know, agencies like CDC and NIH or National Institutes of Health, all of that under one umbrella. So this is something that's occurring at the state level. And according to the director, Kelly Garcia, this will be more efficient, something that people can, if they need paperwork or something with the human services, they can also get in touch with the Department of Public Health. So I think my understanding was that in many of the counties, these two agencies are used to be in the same offices. So what they're doing is creating that for efficiency.
So they've been working.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been working on this since pre-COVID. When will the merger be completed? Do you have, did he give you a date or a ballpark?
He did not give us a date. But I've seen, because I follow them on social media and I've seen the changes. At least, for example, you know, the brand and all that, that has slowly been changing to Iowa Health and Human Services. So now it's IHHS. But you will still see information coming from, for example, the COVID information, flu information. When I went to look for it to get ready, and today we have a Board of Health meeting, it's still under public health, for example. I think they're slowly going to be merging those to become one. So okay. I don't know when it'll be complete. I think it's more a legislative kind of decision. I don't know, but I don't know.
Now, you mentioned you have a Board of Health meeting for the county. I assume that's the county. And is that in the afternoons?
Yes. So we hold a meeting every 2 months on Tuesdays from 2 to 4. It's open to the public. Mm-hmm. We also have a Zoom link. So if you go to the Story County Board of Health website, you can find the link, and everyone in the public can attend. The only time we have closed session if it's for a personnel issue, since the Board of Health oversees the Environmental Health Department for Story County. And so there's people, employees in that, and that's the only time when it's closed session. But other than that, it's open. The agenda and the minutes from the past meetings are posted as well on the website. So, yes, we invite anyone in Story County, anyone from the public to join us. And if they have any questions, they can attend virtually or face-to-face.
And I assume, if I remember right, there is a time for public comment or question as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's usually, my understanding is, I've been serving, I think, almost 9 months, And so far, no, I haven't seen anybody from the public, but it's at the beginning of the meeting.
So you're relatively new to the board then, and so that means you're with them for the long haul here. I'm sorry, I used the wrong term. I shouldn't have used that with COVID about. Yeah, what's your feeling about serving on that board so far? It's relatively new, or you've done some of this in the past for the university on other boards.
Yes, so... I think right now we have an open application period. I don't know if it has closed or not, because we have some members that are maybe rotating off, but I'm not sure. So I'm sure I'll probably hear about it today. But yeah, it's been very interesting. My main expertise is in workplace health and safety. So, and you know, public health serves in all places, right? Where we live, learn, play. And it's been very interesting. I've learned... Last meeting, we had a speaker about lead in houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very interesting to me, since I don't work. I don't do that type of work. So that was, and then we talk a lot about immunizations. We talk about environmental health. So, for example, going and verifying septic tanks, wells. Also, the environmental health director has talked about tattoo parlors, pools, tanning salons. So it's definitely something that I'm learning about that I did not normally learn or had an opportunity to learn about.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So it's a learning experience as you continue to serve. And I know you bring a great form of expertise, especially in workplace safety. So glad you're serving on that board. And again, I will include the information on how to get to that board meeting. If not for today, for future meetings.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the agenda is usually posted a week ahead, so people can, if there's something of interest, then people can tune in.
Right. And you can find that on the Story County website. For those agendas, there's a place for that. Before we forget, monkeypox had been in the news. What's our situation here in the state of Iowa?
So you can find how many cases there are in the state of Iowa. I know that last time I checked, which was a Monday, yesterday, monkeypox numbers, we have 13 cases in central Iowa. So the state is divided in different sections. And for central Iowa, we had 13 cases. We do have an active vaccination process. Now, the people have to comply with a specific eligibility during screening. In Story County, the provider of those vaccines is at Iowa State University, the TLEN Student Health Center is the provider of those vaccines for Story County.
Okay.
So if you have any questions about that and you feel that you want some answers, their phone number is 515-294-5801. And they can put you in touch with a healthcare provider that can give you some information about that.
Okay, Betsy, would you repeat that number one more time for our listeners, please?
Yes, 515-294-5801.
Very good. Okay, in our last minute or so, I know there's some events of note coming up. There's two events that you highlighted. Explain about those just a little bit, please.
So it's very important to know about fires and mm-hmm. how to prevent fires. So the Ames Fire Station, October 15th, Saturday, October 15th, will have an event. It's a station number one. It's in 1300 Burnett Avenue in Ames. And you can learn about fire safety. They will teach you how to use a fire extinguisher, which is a very important skill that you want to know, but hopefully never have to use. There's a few events. 5K season, so if you're into running or you've never run before, there's a few events about that. So if you have that on your bucket list, that could be something that you Google 5Ks and that. And also, there is a blood drive that started yesterday in the Iowa State University Memorial Union. It's going to be October 3rd to the 6th, so basically this week. And if you are interested in doing that, Red Cross Blood, redcrossblood.org. You can find information on how to volunteer to donate blood, which is very important.
Yes, especially, well, it's important at all times, but with some of the disasters we have, it's critically important. Okay, Betsy, you've got the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, no, I'm just very thankful for this opportunity just to be here and talk to people. Just stay out there, stay safe, but enjoy life also at the same time. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. At Story County Board of Health, Dr. Betsy Matos, she's the Assistant Director of Iowa State University's Environmental Health and Safety. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, Pat, I had an opportunity to visit with Todd Burris and one of his employees at Wild Birds Unlimited. It's Feathered Friends Tuesday, a week late, but we're going to listen to what Todd has to say.
What a great feature to include Todd Burris and his wife, Stephanie. Thank you.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, because I like birds.
This is Mike Metz with KHOI, and it's Feathered Friends Tuesday, and I'm down here at Wild Birds Unlimited, and I am visiting with
Jennifer Hart.
Autumnal equinox today, the first full day. We're in transition, so what have you been hearing?
A lot of customers have been asking if they should be putting their hummingbird feeders away and to try to encourage birds, the hummingbirds, to leave, and that is not true. That's a myth. Right now, a lot of what you're seeing are the juvenile hummingbirds that have never flown south before, and it takes them a little bit longer to figure it out, but they will do it. Their instincts tell them to. They can't say no to their instincts, and they just need that extra bit of sugar nectar to help them on their way. And you can help that by leaving your hummingbird feeders out till at least October 1st.
Thank you. Todd Burris of Wild Birds Unlimited. Todd, this is the change of seasons. Today is the first full equinox day. Mm-hmm. I know there's a migration going on, but it's kind of in transition. What are we seeing out there?
Well, interestingly enough, as yesterday was the beginning of the first full day of fall, I had a white-throated sparrow in my backyard, mm-hmm. and then also later in the afternoon saw a red-breasted nuthatch. Other people have commented that they've seen one, but that was the first one that I had seen. And
sure.
So those are two birds that I associate with a transition of season. So it was ironic to some degree that it was happened to be yesterday.
A lot of people keep lists for certain areas. Are mm-hmm. these, is this your list for yard birds? Is this a good music group? Or
the yard birds, that's good. I think they're still kind of around. So those are a couple birds that, to me, show that we're experiencing that change of seasons. We're still seeing hummingbirds coming through. I saw one this morning, saw a few this week. Probably just based on what kind of seeing and hearing, we probably are getting to the tail end of their migration.
I've heard mixed pieces of advice as to hummingbirds and hummingbird feeders, and we're going to hear it here first. What is the real story about leaving your hummingbird feeder out at this time of year?
Yeah, people are always asking whether or not they should take it down because somehow that's going to cause the birds to not continue their migration, and it's going to hold them up and they may get caught in bad weather, that kind of thing. And that's just not, they're much smarter than we are about those sort of things. It's generally middle of October, so it seems like when you're really down to the last, you know, few birds. So we tell people to keep them up until at least the middle of October. And then if you go a week or so without seeing any hummingbirds, you can take it down, but there's always a few that are, for whatever reason, are slow coming through. Mm-hmm. And so if you keep that feeder out there and they're able to find it, it'll help them get through at least a part of the next
sure.
movement that they want to make.
And that's just like a supplemental station. Hummingbirds were here much before our bird feeders were, and there's a few late blooms and things mm-hmm. like that. So they're going to pick up energy, but you're helping them continue that on that track.
Yeah, absolutely. The amount of energy that they can expend by virtue of being such a small animal that's constantly in flight, anything that you can put out is helpful. There's just not a lot of wildflowers left on the landscape now
right.
that they can get nectar from. There's, you know, people are starting to get rid of their other plants and things like that. So they need those sources of sugar to help them on their arduous journey to Mexico.
Oh, I thought it was they would use that as their in-flight meal while they're sitting on the back of a Canada Goose or something. So anyway, okay.
Talk about myths.
Yeah. We're starting to see flocks of northern flickers coming in. Have you been hearing reports of that? Or
I think about a week ago, maybe had somebody come in that was asking, what are these birds that I'm seeing out in my yard? And they look like a woodpecker, but they're on the ground and they're pecking at the ground or they're pecking at logs or things like that. And I said, well, probably northern flickers, because they are starting to move through.
Sure.
And they're not the typical woodpecker that we think of that's on the tree. Yeah.
When they fly away from you, they have that distinctive white patch
yeah,
at the base of their tail.
Yeah, a few of those birds will stay through the winter. Mm-hmm. A lot of these birds are going to continue farther south. We always have some that stay through the winter.
Getting back to an earlier sighting, you had the red-breasted nuthatch.
Yeah, it's only been probably in the last couple of years that we've even had reports of them in Story County through the summer. Really unusual, seemingly. Maybe two of these birds that people see early in the fall are going farther south, maybe Kansas, that kind of place.
Sure.
And then maybe we'll have some that'll end up here and stay through the winter. But birds that are in transition now, I mean, most of the warblers are either through or they're very end of their migration through.
When you start to see yellow-rumped warblers, you kind of know you're towards that end, because yellow rumps, they're not dependent on insects.
Right.
They'll eat some seeds and things.
Yeah, they're kind of one of the few, and they're tiny and they're mighty.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
When kids ask me, or folks that are new to birding, I always say, when you start to see yellow-rumped warblers, we call them that yellow sign in the back says, caution, winter's ahead.
Well, Steph told me this morning, so she's been in Minnesota for the last 5 days, she saw Canada warblers and yellow warblers still there.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the hummingbird migration. We're getting toward the end of those. There's still swallows out on the landscape, but a lot of those birds, the barn swallows and the tree swallows, and those birds are on their way, or if they're not, they're very close to leaving. And purple martins are another one of those birds that are gone now. You've been engaged in this too, but counting chimney swifts in Nevada and Ames this late summer, those numbers I've noticed are really starting to drop. I counted birds at the Octagon on Wednesday night and I had 55.
Okay.
And 2 weeks ago, it was close to 300. I just saw one nighthawk the other night. Previous weeks, have been seeing a lot of them. And mm-hmm. a lot of those birds are not local birds. You can see them. They're moving and
flying
south. Sure. Along. And then I mentioned seeing the white-throated sparrow, but Iowa's got a couple dozen species of sparrows. And some of those sparrows that are more maybe the open grassland sparrows and things, those birds are migrating south. And then some of the more maybe northern sparrow species are coming down. And so that's, we'll see the white-throated sparrows, the white-crowned fox sparrows. Juncos is a sparrow. They'll be coming through soon. They're a harbinger of winter for sure. We'll be seeing American tree sparrows too. I've been seeing a lot of chipping sparrows the last couple of weeks. And I wonder if there were some late nestings in our area that, because it seems like I'm seeing young chipping
right.
sparrows along with the adults. They look an awful lot like an American tree sparrow. And so
you start looking for the little blotch on the breast.
On the breast, yep.
Yeah, and the longer tail.
Yep. And then we've got, I don't know if you've seen anything out at your place yet, but we should be, you know, rough-legged hawks, northern ghost hawks, even golden eagles will start coming into the northeast corner of the state soon.
The hawks on the way up mm-hmm. north, I didn't see so many, but coming back on Wednesday, there are more, well, I like to call them the pickets, because they're sitting on either a fence post
yeah.
or up on a power. You're starting to see a move through, definitely,
yeah.
which the goldfinches are changing.
Yep.
Their plumage is going to their winter plumage now.
Yeah, they're a bird that does two partial molts, one in the spring and one in the fall. A lot of people don't realize that goldfinches are here throughout the winter. They're year-round birds. They get into bigger flocks, it seems like. Goldfinches are, they're kind of more of an olive drab, and they kind of fall in that category of small brown birds.
I still notice, but you don't hear much anymore, are the meadowlarks.
Mm-hmm.
You still see them. They're around year-round. Some of them do move
yeah.
to be seen and not heard this time of year.
Yeah.
Some of the raptors. Kestrels also migrate.
Mm-hmm.
So the kestrels that we see here in the winter time are those northern birds that migrate this far and kind of hang out, whereas our locals go farther south. Some even go as far south as Central America.
Right. And another bird that is species that's similar to that are blue jays. That kind of partial, maybe not a full migration. The birds that you have here in the summer probably go south, and then the blue jays that we have here maybe starting anytime now or into the winter are blue jays that have come down from farther north. You never know for sure, but there's, you know, some stay but some
yeah.
go, and then you get new ones. But they've been really busy caching acorns and peanuts and things like that mm-hmm. right now. And another bird that does that and that we don't necessarily think about are robins too. And I was talking to Tyler about robins the other day, and he said he suspects that they do a similar kind of shift, where the robins that are, you know, in Minnesota and Canada
yeah.
and those things are the robins that come here, and some of those spend winter here.
Let's talk real briefly about the transition of feeds. We talked about the hummingbird feeders.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good time of year to be putting your suet feeders out, those types of feeders? I know some folks will leave some of that out year round, but mm-hmm. I would assume now is the time to start getting those.
Yeah, definitely. Birds are looking for high energy foods, fats and carbohydrates, and so suet is a really great option for the birds that stay here through the winter. Almost all of the birds that are here through winter will end up eating suet. We feed suet year-round. There's quality suets that we sell and that you can get that won't melt and that the birds use. Downy woodpeckers, things like that will
yeah.
eat it, but not with the intensity that when it starts getting cooler and everybody starts looking for those kinds of foods. So suet's a good one. And then, like I mentioned with blue jays, peanuts are another high fat food that blue jays like, that woodpeckers like. Even cardinals now that are here this time of year will start eating some shelled peanuts and things like that. That's one that people don't necessarily always feed throughout the summer and stuff, but that's a really good one to have on
yeah.
hand this time of year as well.
You've got an event coming up, Todd, involving the Gilbert Boy Scouts.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
So this is a biannual event that the store has hosted for many years. Spring and fall, we set aside a Saturday, usually in April, and again in either late September or early October, and the Gilbert Boy Scouts, Troop 157, which now also includes a number of girls as well, they and their parents and some of the troop leaders come down to the store. We put out a call for our customers to bring their feeders in to get cleaned before we go into the winter feeding season, get them cleaned up from the summer. They do. The troop comes, and we set up tables, and we've got power washers. And
you drop them off ahead of time? Can you make an arrangement?
Yep, we start taking them the Wednesday before the
okay.
event. So this year the event is Saturday, October 1st, and people that want to get their feeders clean can bring them in, and we'll start taking them on Wednesday, September 28th. Bring them in, preferably empty out any seed that's still in there
sure.
and whatever. We accept the donations for the scouts. And then there's a nominal donation fee for the feeders that we ask that you give to support the troop. We just take the money and give it all directly to the troop, and it's their major fundraisers.
Very good.
For the year. This past spring, I think we did over 200 feeders, which was the most that they've ever done. We hope that we'll have a good turnout this year as well. So people can drop those off on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, even Saturday morning of the event. Typically by 2:00 in the afternoon on Saturday, we're wrapping things up, and people can come back and start picking up their feeders then.
Okay.
They can come in on Sunday and pick them up. Oh, there's the Eco Fair coming up too on.
Oh yeah, are you guys going to have a?
We're going to have a booth there too.
Okay. Thanks, Todd, for taking some time, and we'll be sure to check in with you again next month.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mike. Get out there and enjoy this time of year. It's a beautiful time. Lots of things going on the landscape. Lots of birds moving. Lots of color changes. great time of the year.
Enjoy nature. It's great for your physical health and mental stability. So with that, Stephanie, what do we tell our listeners?
Remember your binoculars. Don't leave home without them.
And where is your store located?
213 Duff, right next door to Dutch Oven Bakery.
So feed yourself to feed the birds. Thank you.
I like that, Mike.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go.
Good morning, Susan Guiazda from the City of Ames. How are you this morning?
Very good. I hope you're having a great morning as well.
Yes, so far so good. Mm-hmm. What have we got coming up for Ames today?
Well, I have just a few quick announcements before we bring on our guest, Sarah Van Meter, and our building official. This is, again, another busy week. A couple of events going on tonight is the Community Conversations on Suicide. That starts at 6:30 at the Ames Public Library. There are just an enormous number of organizations that are involved in this, ranging from Mary Greeley Medical Center to YSS, to our own mental health advocate, Julie Saxton, and her team. Really a powerful conversation. We'll start out with some personal stories. Very few people's lives are not impacted by their own mental health issues or friends or family that have mental health issues. So take advantage of this opportunity to learn a little bit more about what you can do and the resources available right here in Central Iowa. On a lighter note, on Wednesday at noon, we'll have the Healthy Estate Walk in front of City Hall. Gather with Mayor John Hala and some city council members along with city staff, and we will take a quick 1 kilometer walk around downtown. This Healthiest State Walk was started more than a decade ago to really emphasize the importance of physical activity and getting out and getting active and how easy it can be to incorporate physical activity into your day. And finally, on Thursday at 4 p.m. at the old Edwards School site, we will cut the ribbon on Tahira and Lab Hira Park. So a very exciting new addition to the City of Ames Park system. The park has been operating very well for a couple of months, but the Heroes are back in town, and they wanted to celebrate with us this great event. So 4 p.m. on Thursday at Hira Park.
Well, it sure looks like the weather forecast is going to be beneficial for all of those. This getting out in crisp weather in the fall for a walk and then enjoying some time in the park a little later on, it's great. We want to talk to Sarah here now, and we talk about the outdoors, and of course we are going to talk about around buildings, but also interiors, and I believe that's where you come in, Sarah.
I guess so. That's what I'm told.
Yeah. So do you have folks just kind of freeze when they see the inspector coming or somebody from the inspector division?
I would love to say that we're welcomed with open arms, but I'm not sure that's the truth.
But the whole reason that you're there is for safety of folks and making things comfortable. Could you describe just a little bit, in general terms, what your responsibilities are?
Sure. As building official, I oversee the inspection division, which is a division of the fire department. That's a little unique. But we think that it fits really nicely with fire prevention. So we have within our division kind of three more divisions. One is building safety. So that encompasses building inspections, trade inspections, which include plumbing, mechanical, electrical, everything that's inside a structure, essentially. And then we also have rental housing inspections. We have over 15,000 rental housing units that we inspect every 1 to 4 years. We have 3 housing inspectors that conduct those inspections for us. And then we also have a codes liaison who inspects exterior property maintenance items. So more of your nuisance than public health, weeds, those kinds of things. So We kind of do it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, is October, if I recall, is Fire Prevention Month. So I assume you are trying to gear up for that, and especially working with the fire departments. And I know in years past we've had the chief come on and talk about that. But is there something in particular you want to address in that nature? I know this is usually when we check our detectors and things for batteries. So what can you recommend?
So Fire Safety Month, the fire department is having an open house at the fire department on October 15th. We're very excited to have that back. We'll have some inspectors there with, we actually use a dollhouse and we point out hazards within the structure to kids, kind of interactive. They can guess where the concerns are. And I think even more fun than that is to watch the parents learn while the kids are learning. So it's very rewarding. Just little things that people don't know, cleaning out their bath fans, you know, not blocking doors, making sure you have a way out. Just simple things that I think a lot of us take for granted.
You know, you talk about the kids and the influence on the parents. And how many of us remember stop, drop, and roll? For we were taught in grade school. So great way to get to the family. That's for certain. What... Let's set a little bit of a scenario here. If somebody wanted to register maybe a complaint of somebody having an unkempt area, how would they go about contacting your office? What's the proper way to do that?
We have several different ways. So really what's most easiest for that person? We have Ames on the Go, which is an app that you can, maybe you're out taking a walk and you have the app up. You can stop right where you are. It'll geocode your location. You can take a picture of it, which is great. That gets to our staff then and can put a brief description of the concern. And then it gets routed to our codes liaison. You can also email us at inspections@cityofames.org or call into our office at 239-5153. And if you're feeling really eager and you want to take a nice walk in the fall weather, you're welcome to come into City Hall and register your complaints in person.
Okay. Sarah, if you could repeat that phone number one more time for our listeners.
Sure. It's 515-239-5153. And the email is inspection with an S at the end at cityofames.org.
Very good. Thank you. Just to get back in the fire situation, are you also involved with leaf burning that we're not supposed to be doing here in town? And then the idea of enjoying a backyard fire, is that something that your department handles as well?
We don't typically get involved with that. The fire inspector does have an office within our office. He can investigate those, but typically if you have a complaint of that, you would call into the fire station and they would send a crew out to go educate that person on what proper burning methods are, what they can burn, where the burn should be located, all those educational things. And then if you are wanting to have a burn, we do have burn permits. So some people this time of year will start burning prairies and whatnot. They need to call into the fire department and get a permit to do that.
Very good information. Yeah, this is especially this time of year and as dry as it's been, we really need to take extra precautions because, gosh, right now with the crops out there, if you were living on the edge of town, for example, and something got away from you, it could get away a long ways. And let's get back to buildings somewhat. We have, of course, properties that are owned by individuals. There's also rental properties. Are you part of the rental property as far as inspections for folks that are looking at an area or there's an upkeep issue? Address the rental property situation as far as how you enter into that, please.
Yep, so we have three housing inspectors that inspect rental properties.
Okay.
If we have complaints about exterior property maintenance on a rental property, that would go back to our codes liaison unless we're actively in the process of inspecting the rental property. So we have a report that we run. It tells us when we need to go out and inspect each rental structure. We'll have an inspector go out, notice any deficiencies, and then give a time for corrections. They'll go back for a reinspection and make sure that they're all resolved. So that happens every 1 to 4 years on every rental property, and that does include Airbnb.
Okay. And then the last area that I just want to visit with you briefly about is, if folks are planning on building a new structure, you're the office, you're the department to go to and submit for a building permit and those kinds of things. Can you just walk us through briefly that, how folks go about doing that?
Sure. We permit anything from brand new houses to new decks, remodels, pools, anything regarding your structure we'll permit. New water heaters are permitted, you refinishing your basement, anything like that is going through our office. So you'll submit a plan to us, and our plans examiner, that's his job, is to look at paper all day and make sure that your plan meets code. It's really helpful for the customer to have that feedback so that when they start, they're off on a good foot. We then go out for a couple inspections depending on what kind of build you're doing. We may have a footing foundation inspection, like for a new home, and then a framing inspection, and then we'll do a final at the very end to make sure that everything is complete and code compliant. And some people find that to be burdensome. I totally get that, but our job is to keep all of our structures safe. We understand you're probably not going to live in a house forever, and so we have an obligation to protect the next owner and neighboring property owners as well.
Right. And in regards to those new permits and things, I know that fencing has been an issue at times where there's some encroachment. Is that something that you also would handle, for example?
So fences are a bit funky. they don't have permits. Permits are not required for fences.
Okay.
But I like to let everyone know, even if a permit is not required, that does not mean that there are not regulations surrounding it. So fences are regulated through the zoning code, actually. So if you want to have us review your fence before you install it, always a good idea. Even if we say there's no permit, come have us review it so that we can make sure it's correct and that you don't have to take it down once it's put up.
Yeah, it's a lot better to, you know, the old saying is ask for forgiveness after doing it, but it's a lot better to start out on the right foot for things like that. So the last question I have for you is, we have a lot of alternative energy ways of creating that, and solar panels, for example, are one of those ways. Is that something that you're also involved with?
Yes, yeah, so we're seeing a lot of solar permits right now, actually. The number of them are increasing. So typically if you're going to do a solar installation, we're going to need an electrical permit for the hookup. You're going to need to talk with electric distribution also. And then some people might overlook it, but we do need a building permit to make sure that the solar structure you're putting on your roof is mounted correctly and that the roof can accommodate it. Some of these older houses aren't built to hold that much weight.
Right.
Okay. So all of that and issue those permits.
All right. Well, Sarah, have you got any last things that maybe we overlooked that we should address this morning?
Exposure note, call us if you have questions. If you're hesitant or you think you're going to do something, give us a call. We'll steer you in the right direction. And stop out and see us on October 15th at Station 1 at 13th and Burnett. We're happy to have you.
Okay, thank you. That's Building Official Sarah Van Meteren, part of the Inspection Divisions. Thank you for joining us this morning, and we'll see you when we're ready to do a new building.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right.
Woman, or whether you're a man, sometimes you got different people in your soul. Feel like a loser until you see that as you bend, you learn to be your own best friend. And you learn how and you learn when to take a chance on the spirit of the wind.
St. Marie, you've got to run. Spirit of the Wind. And we want to welcome now Larry Gullett from the Johnson County Conservation Board. And good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
We're doing well here this morning. There's been a recent purchase of some property for the Iowa Indians. What can you tell us about this?
Well, you're right. We had a landowner contact us with 90 acres for sale, and it was a donation purchase agreement. And we had went back to the landowner and asked them if they maybe would be interested in making some of the donation to the Iowa tribe instead of all of it to Johnson County. And they said, sure. So the project had been in the works for about 2 years, and we just closed on the project in late April. And then just last month, the donation of property to the Iowa tribe came to fruition. So it's kind of a long story, but that's basically how it happened.
Well, give us just, if you can briefly tell our listeners, why is this significant for the Iowa tribe? You know, we have Meskwakis who own land, for example. What's significant here with the Iowa tribe?
Well, you know, the whole state of Iowa is named after the Iowa people. Mm-hmm. The Iowa River, one of the longest interior rivers in Iowa, is named after the Iowa people. So over here in Johnson County, we are right in the heart of their homeland, their ancestral land, and they were moved out of the state, and I think they moved out in the 1830s due to colonialism. And so in essence, this is a returning of some of their original homeland. And the reason why it happened is we have another really special public area about 1 mile from this site that's named Chongleshka Wakan. And Chongleshka Wakan refers to the sacred hoop or the interconnectedness of all things. And what happened is in the naming of this other area about a mile from this site, it was a donation purchase agreement also. And as a donation purchase agreement, the landowners have a right to be involved in the naming process according to our policy. And after about 6 months of thinking about what they wanted to name the property, they came back and they said, let's go with Chongleska Wakan. And I said, whoa, what does that mean? And they said, well, it's a Lakota word that means the sacred hoop, and it refers to the interconnectedness or cyclic nature of all things. Well, we weren't about to give a Lakota name to property that's right in the heartland of the Iowa territory, their homeland. So we went through a process to get authorization to use that name, the Lakota name, and I had a drummer and a singer from the Iowa tribe from White Cloud come up and visit the property and ask him what the name Chongleska Wakan is, what's the translation into the Iowa language. And they said, no, Larry, you don't understand. The Iowa people are great friends with the Lakota people. And whenever we have an intertribal gathering, we have a song that we sing that connects the two tribes together, the Lakota with the Iowa. And they said, what we'll do is we'll sing this song inside this big round barn, thereby connecting the two tribes so you can use that Lakota name. So they sang this song, connected the two together, and we named this site Chongleska Wakan after we went through a four-day naming ceremony with some Lakota. During that whole process, Lance Foster, who's a member of the Iowa tribe from White Cloud, came to me and he said, if you ever get a chance to have some property gifted or eventually transferred to the Iowa people, we would appreciate it. And I said, well, why would you want to do that when you live 150 or 200 miles away? And he said, because it would be nice to have a place where our people can come to and connect both spiritually and physically to the landscape. And so it just so happened that right after that conversation, that's when Aaron and Brian Malloy came to us and said, we'd like to now sell our property to you, but by the way, we're willing to sell it to you at about half price, half its appraised value, so there's a significant donation involved. So that's when I asked the Malloys if they would be willing to do this, and of course, they're great people. They were all on board with it.
What a great way to connect to groups that I wish more of us would follow on that example. Larry Patchelarbaum's with me here, and he has a few questions as well.
Hey, thank you, Larry, for all you do for conservation. And so this is a kind of a new area of interpreting and preserving cultural resources. I know you've spent your career with prairie and savanna and a lot of and waterfowl habitat, but now you've branched into the cultural area. Was this always in kind of in your makeup, or is this kind of a new becoming for you?
Well, I've always recognized the direct connection between cultural history and natural history. There's an interconnected link that allows people to get more of an appreciation out of nature and the environment if you understand the cultural associations with it too. And so I've always had that training and that background and that passion. But in the 90s, after we had restored thousands of acres of greenbelt area in Dallas County, you know, restoring the wetlands and prairies and woodlands, we felt like something was missing. So at that point in time, we wanted to do something to get the stories back to the place. So I had contacted Maria Pearson from Ames, who passed away in 2003, and asked her if she would help us get the stories and songs of the people back to the place. This was in Dallas County. And so we started a program called the Prairie Awakening, although we didn't name it for about 3 years until after it started, because we really didn't know what it was about. Mm-hmm. And Maria ended up naming it too, Prairie Awakening. So Pat, I've always had this connection between cultural history and the landscape. And it just so happens, you know, as most of us know that work in conservation, indigenous cultures have a much deeper connection with the land and a much higher respect for the land than our culture does. And so to me, anytime we can network with the indigenous nations and people and learn from them about how they honor and respect and treat land, it helps us form a deeper connection with our places where we live and the land itself. And so we're hoping this is a win-win situation for us, for all that we can learn, for the way the Iowa people look at the earth and associate with it, and how they can teach us to form deeper connections with the land.
How they can teach us, those are words to live by. We've got in the final minute here, how about the location of the two horse farms that the Molloys have? Does it overlook the Iowa River?
Yeah, it does. It's on a high ridge. It's about, as the crow flies, probably about 5 miles straight north of Iowa City, just on the east side of Coralville Reservoir. It's on a high ridge, 90 acres of prairie and savanna. The family who owned it had spent their lifetime restoring and maintaining the savanna and prairie and woodlands. And so it's on this beautiful high ridge overlooking the Iowa River Valley and Coralville Lake. And the 7 acres that was donated to the Iowa people is the highest elevation of prairie, one of the most beautiful places to go sit and just contemplate and think about things.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a wonderful development and a developing story. We're hoping to have Lance Foster on in the future. But thank you, Larry Gullett, with the Johnson County Conservation Board. And have a good day.
You guys too.
Thank you, Larry.
KHY provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and provide information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHY. We are your community nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
And thank you to co-hosts Pat Schrullerbaum and station manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk, and a tug of the KHOI toque to producer Lynn Carey for her assistance with this morning's programming.
Remember that you can also hear this online at khoyfm.org and find links to our guests and the information you heard. During this program, All Things Piano with Tom Russell follows Democracy Now! At 8 a.m., our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOY meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOY. And we'll see you again
on the radio.
Listening to KHOI, Story City Ames, community listening for the heart of Iowa.